This episode is sponsored by me, Andy Hill, the host of this show. If you're looking for someone to support you on your family, wealth, and happiness journey, I'm taking on a select number of coaching clients this year. To work with me one-on-one for your family finances, go to marriagekidsandmoney.com/coaching to learn more. In the end, there is no denying that everything is just more expensive lately. While it might have seemed like our imaginations at first, there is plenty of proof of this. As a result, more and more people are wondering how to do this, how to keep living and still enjoy life. This show is dedicated to helping you strengthen your family tree and live financially free. Welcome to the Marriage, Kids, and Money podcast, everybody. This is Andy Hill, and today we're going to do two different things. First, we're going to review 8 tips for reducing expenses at home. Yes, with inflation taking a bite out of our budgets lately, it's time to bite back, people. Second, we're back with our Work From Anywhere segment. This month, we're featuring Miranda Marquit, a professional freelance writer. Yes, she's going to share how she has grown her part-time business to earn over $10,000 per month. And we'll discuss steps for others considering freelance writing as well. People, I've been a freelance writer too. It is good money, especially if you have an expertise in a specific area. Anyway, Miranda's going to share a lot more about that. All right, let's jump into today's show. There's inflation, shrinkflation, and then plain old corporate greed. What's a consumer to do lately? If you want to stick to a budget and meet your financial goals, it's easy to feel deflated lately. But learning how to reduce expenses at home, it can go a long way. In this episode, we're going to share 8 tips and tools for you to try to get back on track with your finances. Let's start with number 1, shop at lower cost grocery stores. Have you stopped by an Aldi lately? Aldi is consistently ranked as a top grocery store for both quality and cost savings. People are often shocked to discover how inexpensive their stuff is. I know, we were definitely shocked when our family started shopping there about 5 years ago. If you don't live in an area with an Aldi, you can still save big by shopping at a place like Walmart or other lower cost grocery stores. You can create a price list on your phone to log which store offers the most competitive prices on different items. Then you can batch your shopping trips to minimize time and money spent. Before you shop, be sure to create a list. We do this through our Google Home app. We just say, hey, Google, add this to the shopping list, or blah, blah, blah. During the week, that makes it a lot easier. If the kids want to add something, we want to add something. That way we know when we get there, these are the things we're trying to buy, and not overbuy things that we don't need, right? That's when the grocery pantry as well as the refrigerator just gets stocked with stuff that you don't need and that eventually kind of just turns into food waste, which is a big budget buster that often goes unnoticed for a lot of people. Consistently use up those ingredients that you buy, consistently use up the things in your refrigerator, and you'll be surprised how much further your grocery budget goes. Number 2, meal prep Sunday. Are you winging your meals each week? We end up doing that too quite a bit, but that can take a big bite out of your budget. That's because when we navigate our busy evenings without a plan, it's hard to resist the temptation of takeout or that good smelling McDonald's drive-thru. Take time each Sunday or whichever day fits your schedule to plan out your meals in advance. You can use a notebook, a notes app on your phone, or a dedicated meal planning board or a tool. I have been texting with my nephew and his girlfriend. They have this beautiful calendar of all of the meals they're going to make during the week. It helps them to plan to eat healthy and it helps them plan ahead, which is great. No matter what you use, having a plan for what you feed your family can save you big. It can save you big on time as well. Take your meal planning even further by spending specific time on Sunday to meal prep. For some families, that means portioning out and even pre-cooking full meals. Then you can store them in the fridge or the freezer to reheat as needed. Other people just simply take the time to chop the veggies, prepare other ingredients and things like that, so everything is good to go. Either way, you'll save yourself a lot of time and you're going to fight off the temptation to carry out every meal. Number 3, adjust your insurance. When was the last time you shopped around for insurance? If you carry car and homeowners insurance, you want to commit to exploring your options once a year. Sometimes you can switch carriers and save hundreds of dollars while keeping the same coverage. You can make your life even easier by finding a reputable insurance broker who will do the shopping for you. Do you have a healthy emergency fund already? Well, then you might be able to adjust your insurance to save even more because your deductible can be adjusted. The deductible is the amount of money you pay before your insurance kicks in. For example, if you are in a car accident, many insurance policies have a $500 deductible. You can adjust that deductible to maybe $1,000. And in doing so, your insurance premium, the monthly payment or the quarterly payment or the half a year payment, will likely drop. Of course, you want to make sure that you can comfortably cover that deductible. That's where the emergency fund comes in. You also want to crunch the numbers. If adjusting your deductible only saves you like $50 a year, it's probably not worth it. Number four, create a budget. Does budget sound like a bad word? Does it sound like a B word in your house? Don't worry, it's not. A budget is simply a spending plan. You and your partner take a look at how much money comes into your household each month. Then you really get intentional about where you want that money to go. When you think about it like this, it's hard to view a budget as anything other than empowering. Plus, there are so many low-cost budget tools that you can explore right now. Our favorite money management tool right now is Monarch Money after Mint went bye-bye recently. Still shedding a tear on that one. We started up on Monarch Money and it's honestly been so much better than Mint, really. It's designed for couples. So my wife has her own login and I do too. We're saving more and we're communicating a lot more effectively than we did with Mint, which is great. I'll put a link to Monarch in the show description. Right now, they've got a 50% off deal because of this Mint transition. So if you use the code MINT50, you'll be able to get that deal. Anyway, moving back onto our list, number five, eliminate unused subscriptions or memberships. Most of us know that impulse spending can drain our budget, so we take steps to avoid it, right? Maybe you've learned to leave items in your online shopping cart for 24 or 48 hours to see if you really, really need them, right? Perhaps you make it a point to stick to your list that you made before you leave when you're shopping at Costco. I know that could be really tough to do from personal experience, but sometimes impulse spending is harder to spot. You sign up for a subscription on a whim, or you take out a membership for a company that you don't visit. Think about all of the TV or video subscriptions you might have right now. Paramount Plus, Netflix, Hulu, YouTube TV, whatever. There's dozens of them now. Which ones are you actually using? And which ones are just simply draining your bank account for weeks, for months, or even years? That's why we suggest going over your budget with a fine-tooth comb. You can spot spending that is no longer serving you or that you're not even using. Then you can move that money to something that you actually value. Number six, negotiate recurring bills. You can't negotiate every bill, right? For instance, most of us are locked into those utilities, but you can double check that you aren't paying extra fees when you pay for your water or your electricity bills. Sometimes companies tack on an added cost for using a credit card. In that case, you may want to pay directly from your bank account instead. However, there are other bills that you can and should negotiate. Have you been with your cell phone provider for like a long time? Compare the cost and coverage to other carriers out there like Telemobile. We pay $25 per month per line for unlimited data, text, and talk after switching from Verizon. So that's a super cheaper, better experience for us in our household. Now, if you prefer not to switch your company, I totally get that. Just take that lower cost option to your cell phone carrier and see if maybe they could consider cutting you a deal, right? Sometimes cell phone companies run promotions to attract new customers. They might extend that deal to you as an incentive to keep your business. You can try similar tactics with internet and cable providers as well. You might not always be successful, but a quick call or one of those like secure chat conversations online can sometimes save you big bucks. Number seven, eliminate high interest debt. One of the most important ways to reduce expenses at home is to spend less on your debt. We are big fans of debt freedom here, but we also acknowledge that it could be a long road to get there. Just because you have a mortgage and student loans doesn't mean that you need to carry all kinds of debt. Instead, focus on eliminating high interest debt. This debt can be the result of credit card use, or overuse for that matter. If your debt is costing you more than 10% in interest, tackle that first. There are different approaches to paying off debt, of course. Some people prefer the debt avalanche method, where you pay the highest interest debt first, while others, like the debt snowball method, where you pay the debt with the lowest balance first to get that quick win. No matter which debt payoff method you choose, it's important to get rid of that high interest debt as soon as you can. It just helps you breathe easier and it gives you back more money. Number 8, find frugal ways to have fun. What does your discretionary spending look like each month? If your family is like ours, the Hill family, this category, it can get out of hand quickly. If you're wondering how to reduce expenses at home, start by tracking your spending. Pay close attention to how much you spend on discretionary categories like entertainment and eating out. Then see if you can make some frugal fun swaps. For some inspiration, visit your local library. Not only do you have access to books and DVDs and other media for free, but you'll also be surprised at what else you can check out of your library if you haven't visited in a while. Some of our favorite things to browse your library include seeds for gardening, board games for family game night, molds or pans for fun baking competitions with the kids, puzzles to keep you busy on rainy days, and so much more. And the so much more category, we often visit our library and we're surprised at some of the things that are available, right? You know, there are opportunities for us to check out museum passes and tickets for community events. We have a local science center here in our community, and the tickets are typically like $20 per person. So if I take my kids, that's $60, man, right? But our library has free passes for us to rent out. And I never really knew about this until I looked into it. I guess you never really know until you ask, right? If you're unsure about what you have access to at your library, check out your library's website or just stop by to inquire in person. Well, that's our list of 8 tips for helping you reduce expenses at home, everyone. In the end, there is no denying that everything is just more expensive lately. While it might have seemed like our imaginations at first, there is plenty of proof of this. As a result, more and more people are wondering how to do this, how to keep living and still enjoy life, right? One of the best ways to reduce expenses at home, honestly, is to start with a budget. In a survey of 1,000 adults, CNBC found that 53% of Americans say learning how to budget and track expenses is the most valuable money lesson they've ever learned. Check out our favorite budget app, Monarch Money, to see how they can support your budget. Monarch Money takes the budgeting process and they simplify it by providing an intuitive dashboard, easy collaboration with your spouse, and a really slick mobile app. I just check it while I'm drinking my coffee in the morning. Super easy. Check out Monarch Money in our show description. Use that code MINT50 when you sign up. You get 50% off. That code is limited to this Mint transition time window that we're in right now. So take advantage of it while you can. Then you can combine your budgeting skills with these other cost-saving measures we reviewed today to build a brighter financial future for your family. Well, enough from my side, everyone. I want to hear from you. What are some other ways to reduce expenses at home? What's worked well for you during this inflation transition? Please let us know by sharing this episode on social media and tagging me at Marriage Kids and Money on Instagram or Facebook, or at Andy Hill MKM on LinkedIn. Let's keep this family empowering conversation going. Are you looking for someone to walk alongside you on your journey to family financial independence? Well, I would love to help you achieve your goals and help your family thrive. I work with couples, individuals, and families all around the U.S. via video chat and can assist in the following areas: becoming debt-free, growing your net worth, crafting and sticking to your budget, reviewing Coast Fire plans, developing strategies to build generational wealth for your kids, and designing your future work optional lifestyle. Doesn't that sound nice? If you're interested in working with me one-on-one, you can book a time with me by visiting marriagekidsandmoney.com/coaching. I would love to help you strengthen your family tree and live financially free. Visit marriagekidsandmoney.com/coaching to learn more, or you can click the link in our show description. If you're looking to improve your financial situation, it helps when you're able to cut out unnecessary costs. Cell phone services are a necessity for sure, but we don't need to be overpaying for them, right? That's why I like Telo Mobile, a phone service worth talking about. We've been fully on board as a family with Telo for over 2 years now, and we are so happy that we made the switch. For us, the reception and data service is better than Verizon, and our costs were nearly cut in half. Telo runs on the T-Mobile network, and it's wowing new customers like us with their rock-bottom prices and stellar service. With over 10,000 reviews, Telo is rated as excellent on Trustpilot, and this is quite rare in the wireless world. Nicole and I went for the unlimited data, minutes, and texting plan for only $25 per month each. Isn't that crazy? You heard that right. $25 is their most expensive plan, actually. And Telo is running a special offer for MKM listeners right now. Check out Telo today at marriagekidsandmoney.com/Telo. That's marriagekidsandmoney.com/Telo. And use the code MKM20 to get 20% off on your first month of service for any Telo plan above that $10 per month mark. Again, use MKM20 to get 20% off at marriagekidsandmoney.com/Telo, and you'll be supporting this show. Hurry up. The code is valid until April 19th, 2024. marriagekidsandmoney.com/Telo. More and more people want the flexibility to earn money outside of a traditional office setting. If you're interested in part-time money, side hustles, or full-time work, the number of opportunities to work from anywhere is growing. On our Work From Anywhere segment today, we're going to interview Miranda Marquette. Miranda is a financial wellness expert, freelance writer, and professional podcaster. She has appeared in numerous media, including CNBC, NPR, Forbes, Encyclopedia Britannica, and Investopedia. Today, we're going to discuss how she got started as a freelance writer and the steps others can take to make a healthy living at home as a writer as well. Welcome to the show, Miranda.
Thanks for having me, Andy. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. Well, you and I have connected in real life, so we figured we'd do the non-IRL today as well. Does that sound good?
I stayed at your house. We went sledding down a hill.
Actually, in this room that I'm currently recorded in. So, Miranda, talk to us about what your motivation was for getting started as a freelance writer to begin with.
Yeah, so this was almost 20 years ago, actually, very long time ago. And I, at the time, my son, who is now 21, was a toddler, and my then husband, who I'm now divorced from, my life is so different now, was working on his PhD. So I had this toddler at home and was trying to figure out what I could do with my master's degree in journalism to make some money without having to spend long hours working as a newspaper reporter, because while I got my journalism degree with this idea that I was going to do investigative, hard-hitting journalism, that is not practical when you need money and you have a toddler. So I started looking around and started getting into online freelance writing, and that's kind of how it got started. I hit up the online job boards and applied for a bunch of stuff, and here we are.
21 years later. I love that. So at what point in that journey did you say, okay, not only is this going to, you know, be something where I can earn some money, but I can actually make a decent living doing this? When did you realize that throughout the journey?
Oh gosh, probably about 6 months in, honestly, pretty quickly, mostly because at the time, this was 2005, right? So this is 2005, and there was like this huge ramp up for online content, because it was like just at the beginning of blogs as marketing, all of that kind of stuff. And so it became very evident very quickly that if you could provide content online, then you could pretty much just write yourself a check every month for, you know, as much as you wanted, as much work you were willing to do. So that became evident pretty quickly. And even today, there's still a lot, because now it's just, you know, the content machine needs to be fed. And so, and as odd as it is, the writing is still a big deal. Writing is still very important, even though like video and audio are all also rising in importance. Writing still has its place. So it's been great.
You started this when you had a toddler at home. When did you find that time to be writing? I mean, was this during naps in the beginning, or was this just like, hey, I'm going to work as many hours as possible in order to make the money that I need?
Yeah. So it was, I got up early. One of my first regular clients was actually a company that did see, like, was British based. And so I actually had to get up early and cover the closing of the FTSE, the London market, like the FT, you know, well, the index that's on the London market. Anyway, but I would have to get up early and cover that, and then cover the opening of the New York Stock Exchange. So I was up at like 5 a.m. at first and just, you know, ramming through those regular things. And then my son would get up and, you know, we'd do things. And I did make it a point. One of the things I did do, and this was way back in the day when childcare was not the nightmare that it is today, but I could actually afford to have my son go to daycare, preschool 2 days a week for 4 hours. So I put all of my like really deep work that had to be done, like the most important work, I scheduled that for Tuesdays and Thursdays between I think it was like 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. or something. I don't know. Don't quote me on that. It was 20 years ago. So, it was, you know, okay, we're going to send you in here and we're going to do this between these times. And that's when I said, okay, this is when I have to do the work. And one of the things that I think a lot of people, when we talk about working from home or doing a freelance side gig or any sort of work from homework, we're like, oh, well, you know, we don't have to take the kids to daycare. We don't have to do any of that kind of stuff. And you can make that work, but it's very difficult. And if you have a way of maybe like a co-op or something where you can just carve out like a few hours a week where you can have that work where you can really focus is very helpful. And that was one of the things that was most helpful for me, was being able to say like, okay, I make enough money that I can send him to preschool slash daycare 2 days a week and do that for 4 hours. So 8 hours a week, I know that I'm going to have some very focused time that I can work on the most important client stuff. Everything else I can do at 5:30 in the morning. I can do during nap time, whenever, here and there. But I wanted to make sure I had that focused time.
I love how you pointed that out. I think there's a lot of these images on the online where work from home and there's like a kid hanging on your shoulder in the picture. It's like, no, I got to get out of here. They got to get out of here. Yeah. I just like the flexibility.
I'm sorry, that's not going to work.
Exactly. Yeah, I love getting to the library when I want to get some deep stuff done, just because it helps to get out of here. I mean, I focus on too many other things besides my family. Hey, there's stuff to do here. There's laundry to do here. There's, you know, dishes, make food, things like that. So sometimes it's just good to get out of the house. You talked about this being part-time in the beginning. You weren't doing another full-time job on top of this. This wasn't a side hustle. So this quickly became your full-time, you know, gig.
I was very fortunate in that way. So my ex-husband, when we started this, we had moved to a low cost of living area for him, and he was working on his PhD. And so for that first year, we actually took out student loans for the first year of his PhD. But then by the second year, he'd gotten on a research fellowship. He was, you know, teaching, you know, grad classes. And so we didn't need his student loans. And so he was making a little bit of money to help support that. And so we just lived super frugally on student loans and what I could make as a freelancer, and then kind of move from that and kind of ramp up. And technically speaking, today I work less than I did then.
There you go.
Yeah. Which is not a bad thing. I am not sad about it.
Well, what's your typical like hours worked per week like over the past couple of years?
Yeah. So client work, I always have to divide this up, right? Because like actual client work that I do, I try not to do more than 2 or 3 hours a day. And so we're looking at 10 to 15 hours a week of client work. And then I have the fun things that I do, you know, like my podcast with Sarah that you were on, and like other little project things, like, you know, courses or the little velas that I write, or just little things that I like to do. And then I like to volunteer in my community and do all this other stuff. And so a lot of the time I talk about how this freelance lifestyle and have being able to have grown it to this point allows, like, it basically subsidizes subsidizes everything else I want to do with my life. But it did took a while. Like when we made the transition, when my son actually started going to school and my husband was still finishing up his PhD, there was a time period where I was working, doing client work 50 hours a week, like to ramp everything up. I wasn't getting paid as well as I should have been. I was getting paid very small amounts of money for the articles I was writing. I was working. I did spend a couple of years. There was a time period where I was working like 50 hours a week and working a lot to kind of ramp everything up, do a lot of that writing, build that reputation, and kind of lay that groundwork. And so I think it's important to note that, like, even though right now it's pretty cushy, it did take, there were definitely years in there where it was a lot of work and a lot of grinding it out.
That's something that you have the choice to lever up or lever down based on your needs during the time, which can be maybe different from a full-time job where it's like, okay, if I really want to make a lot more money, I'm going to crank things up with freelance writing. Would you agree?
Oh, 100%. It's one of those things where it's like, and it is hard. I mean, when you're first starting out as a freelancer, like, you have to apply for a bunch of jobs. Like, you're hitting the job boards. And well, today, the LinkedIn wasn't a thing that I did back then. But today, it's like, you're open for work, you're checking the LinkedIn, you're looking at the little freelance writer alert thing, and all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, there is a lot of that where, to start out, just like any other entrepreneurship venture or any other self-employed venture, or however you want to term it, you're going to have to put in a lot of upfront effort and work before you start seeing results. And that's the same with this. But like you said, you can ramp it up or ramp it back. We're kind of talking, I'm at the tail end of an illness right now. And lucky for me, I was able, like, I had this wild hair in January where I was like, huh, I feel like I really want to get stuff done. And that was last week. And I got a lot of stuff done last week, which turned out really good because I was sick this week. And that's kind of one of the trade-offs too. But also, like, if I want to make more money, then I go out there and I pitch more clients and I look for more clients and I accept more work. If I am, like last year, I went to China for 2 weeks. If I'm going to China for 2 weeks, well, then I let my clients know ahead of time and say, hey, instead of doing 6 articles this month, I'm only going to be able to do 3. And then I can scale that back a little bit and enjoy my trip to China. So it is very nice that once you get established and get that reputation, then you have a little more flexibility to ramp up and ramp back depending on your needs.
Yeah, now, so you've talked about this 10 to 15 hours of client work, and obviously you got a lot of other things are going on as well. What would you say you make on average per month as a freelance writer now?
Yeah, so I'm the weird one in this space. I aim to make between $10,000 and $12,000 a month. So I sat down and I figured, here where I live in Idaho Falls, low cost of living area, I need, my base is $6,000 a month. That's what I need. That is my base. And then I like to make between $10,000 and $12,000 a month to feel comfortable and live the lifestyle to which I have been accustomed. And, you know, help my son pay for school, things like that. And so I do. I aim for $10,000 to $12,000 a month. And I've been pretty consistent in keeping to that. Sometimes I say yes, and then I look at things and I'm like, I don't want to make this much money because it means I'm doing more client work than I want to be. But that's, and I know that's like terrible first world problems, but once again, a reminder, I'm 20 years into this. Like, this is not something that I woke up one morning and just magically happened. I think it's important that people understand that, like, this is something that I built over time. And now I am lucky enough and privileged enough to be able to be like, yeah, this is my sweet spot. And then knowing what my floor is, to say, this is my floor. This is what I absolutely have to make each month to, like, meet my basics and the things that I want.
You've been working hard at it. You deserve all the congratulations. Congratulations. I think that's fantastic. I think you've built a great life. And the fact that you're spending a lot of time doing things that you enjoy and then finding ways to give back to your community in so many ways. I know you and I are part of other communities as well. And I know you give back a lot there. Now, to your point, the typical person maybe jumping into freelance writing in their first year as they've made some dedication, what would you suspect based on how many hours they work or things like that? How would you gauge that as far as income?
I mean, I would say if you're starting with almost no experience and moving forward, I think a reasonable goal is to try and, you know, build up, and, you know, depending on how much you're working and how many hours you're working and how proficient you are, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's part-time, I think it's a reasonable goal to aim for between $1,000 and $1,500 a month to work up to that. It'll probably take, I would say 4 to 6 months to ramp up to that and like really kind of work toward that. And so, but I think that's a reasonable goal to work toward. And I'm being very conservative in my estimates here. I know that you will talk to other people who are selling different freelance courses or doing this other stuff, and they'll be like, you can make $2,000 working, you know, $2,000 a month next month, and, you know, using my proven system, send me a bunch of money. And, you know, my course is much more practical and not as like not promising you the world. Like, I'm very, very like conservative in my estimates about that, because it really does depend on a lot of factors. It also depends on the market. It also depends on what kind of content people are looking for. I think one of the things to keep in mind is you and I are in the financial space. That is one of the more lucrative spaces to be in, because writing about money makes money
and brings money.
Yeah, you get paid more. So for me, I would be reasonable to say, like, okay, if you are willing to put in 10 to 15 hours a week as a beginning freelancer and apply for a bunch of jobs, do a bunch of pitching, you know, in 4 to 6 months, you can probably ramp up to making between $1,000 and $1,500 a month and then go from there. And it actually goes faster if you build a reputation for yourself and you kind of figure out a niche. You can actually start building up a little bit faster. But like I said, I'm a big fan of managing expectations.
Absolutely. We appreciate that. We don't like to throw too many hyperboles out during a show about what could be possible.
I'm boring.
I'm very conservative, Phil, myself. Absolutely.
you and I are both out here like, yeah, so, you know, we dabble and stuff, you know, but it's mostly index funds, super boring. Everything right. about me is boring.
It is.
Everything about me is right. boring, including how I'm going to tell you to be a freelancer. It's all very
exactly.
boring.
But at the end of the day, check the net worth of both of these folks on the phone. It works. Absolutely. So I have a question for you. So we're talking about the earnings here. Now, for people starting off, I think it's the first step that really holds people back. You know, like, I don't know where to start. Like, where does somebody get their first gig doing this? And to your point, maybe niching down is a great place to start. I guess take us to the next step from there.
Yeah. So I think one of the best things, I mean, it does help to have just like a basic website, first of all, just that says, here I am, blah, blah, blah. I think, interestingly enough, LinkedIn is one of a really great place to look for content writer jobs, freelance writer jobs. You can actually put that in there. You can look and see what's available and then reach out, apply for those. And then also look on Twitter and Threads are also X, whatever, are good places to look as well, because you'll get people asking for pitches. If you follow like journal request or, you know, some hashtags like that, you'll have people that say, hey, we're looking for pitches. So you can hop in there and look at that. But it does help to have some sort of website where people can come look. It helps to have some sort of writing that you've done before someplace, even if it's on your own website. So, or even if you've, you know, got a Substack or Medium or something that you can show people, hey, look, I can do the thing and I write about this thing. That's very helpful. You want to be able to show that. And then it also helps if you have some sort of connection to the area that you're aiming for. Now, I say this because I did everything wrong, but I started in money and had no idea. I had no connection to money or anything. Somebody just approached me and was like, hey, you're posting a lot on this. It was back when content farms were like a thing. Hey, you're posting a lot. We just want somebody consistent. Write for us. And because I do have a journalism degree, you don't need a journalism degree. But because I do have a journalism degree, like understanding sources and contacting experts and writing and researching were all part and parcel of that. And so I learned about money and kind of moved through that and became a kind of expert that way. Well, as much as an expert is, you know, whatever. Anyway.
You're an expert in my books.
I'm not calling myself a coach yet. Anyway, but no shade to coaches. Coaches are great. Coaches are great. But I think that, you know, it does help though to have some kind of connection to that. And like, if you want to write for, like, I've helped nurses, like nurses who want to, you know, do some more writing. Like, I've helped them find, oh, let's find some like industry health tech websites or publications to get started with, because you are in healthcare and that's something that you know you're knowledgeable about. So it makes more sense for you to go do that instead of trying to break into writing about money or something like that. And so that helps as well. You don't need it. It's not necessary. You can, you know, find ways around it, but it is helpful. And then also there are some job boards that you can check into to get started. I actually have, and I'll send it to you. I think I have a thing where I have like how to get started, like where to start looking for gigs. So I will send that to you and you can put it in the show notes so people can find it. But, you know, and I try and, you know, say like, oh yeah, like here's some different job boards. These are low barrier to entry, which means they're not going to pay super well, but they'll get you started. And sometimes, you know, you do a couple low paying gigs just to get something out there and then ramp up as fast as you can. Then I'll have like other things like, okay, here are some sites, you know, you might have to pay to get these job leads, but the price is worth it. Or, you know, this newsletter or something. So we have different things like that where you can say, hey, these are the barriers to entry. These are the things that you're going to have to watch for. Here's how you do it. Here's how you get started. I will send that to you.
We'll put that free resource in there. Now, you do have a course that kind of walks people through this whole process. So can you tell us a little bit about the course and what people might learn going through that?
Yeah. So this was something that I did with two other freelancers who are also, they actually make more than me, but they also work more than me.
There you go.
but with two other freelancers, we put this together. We actually did it as a live thing for 2 years. Then we decided we were tired of that. So we moved it to Gumroad, and now it's much less expensive because it's not live with us anymore. So a couple different courses. The beginner course will help you figure out how to set up, you know, your website, what you need to do to land your first client and really get started. We have an intermediate course that's really more about like making that shift to full time, what you need to do to really set it up and make that shift to like doing it more than just occasionally. And then we do have a third course that's really more about like the running the business aspects of it. When you need to like outsource, what kind of, you know, business structure you might want, all that kind of stuff. So those are the three different main things that we offer. But yeah, if you sign up for it, then yeah, it takes you step by step through from like, if you go through all of it, it'll take you step by step from how to get started, how to land your first client and get paid, what you need to do to keep getting paid and grow your freelancing career, and then finally, what you need to do to actually run it as a true business.
I love it. I love it. And I'm affiliate of this course, everybody, because I've known Miranda for a while and she's the real deal. And if she's got a course out there teaching people how to become a freelance writer from home, you know, in your spare time, whether it's side hustle money or eventually a full-time thing, check out her course. You can go to marriagekidsandmoney.com/freelancewritersacademy. That's marriagekidsandmoney.com/freelancewritersacademy. Miranda, thank you so much for sharing your story with us and sharing these great tips with everybody as well.
Thank you so much. It was fun to be on. It's good to see you.
As a quick reminder, this show is for entertainment purposes only, my friends. Be sure to seek out a professional for your specific financial situation. Before we go for the day, I want to ask you a quick favor. If you liked this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or sharing it on social media. The best way for more people to find and consider this show is from recommendations from people who actually listen to it and enjoy it and find value from it. So please text a friend with this episode or another one of your favorites. Tell them why you like it and why they should check it out. Or better yet, you can shout it from the social media rooftops and tag your friend Andy at Marriage Kids and Money on Instagram or Facebook, or at Andy Hill MKM on LinkedIn. I appreciate your support in growing this message of family, wealth, and happiness. In the spirit of growth and inspiration, I'm going to end the show with a quote today from Edwin Way Teal. Reduce the complexity of life by eliminating the needless wants of life, and the labors of life reduce themselves. Here's to reducing waste and increasing opportunity. Carpe diem.